Hello, folks, and welcome to Leaky Weekly, the show where we discuss the last week or so of news in the world of data leaks and cybercrime. Now, it's been a little more than a week since the last show, maybe a little more than a month, but we are back from our winter break, and unfortunately, we have a ton of stories. A lot of data has leaked. Remember, first, before we get into them, these stories involve claims by threat actors, so always remain skeptical about the claims. And then a couple of fun announcements. One, we have a community Discord now at Flair, so you can talk with researchers and staff members at Flair. You can yell at me that you liked or didn't like my stories, or propose ones that you think I should cover. And then we are also hosting a couple free trainings. They're in the Discord. You can also find them on flair.io. I'm hosting a few of them. One is Cybercrime Forums, History, and Investigations. The other one is Threat Actor De-Anonymizing. Both will be super fun and very interactive, so please check them out. And without further ado, let's get into today's stories. For our first story, PowerSchool, which hosts the data of more than 50 million students in the U.S. and Canada, was hacked. Now, PowerSchool is a very popular student information system software company. It serves almost 50 million or just more than 50 million students. And it was hacked using a stolen credential, leading to the exposure of all of the student data it hosts to an unauthorized third party who has not been named specifically. Now, as a piece of student information system software, and specifically is one of the most widely adopted ones in the U.S., it's used by the schools that buy it to keep track of student information. So names, addresses, birth date, information about parents, in some cases, social security number, health records, disciplinary records, you name it. So I think the most interesting detail that's come out of the situation so far came from a webcast that NBC News quoted in their article that PowerSchool hosted, where they detailed that they paid the hacker, again, yet to be named hacker, to delete the data that they'd taken. This is kind of the MO now of extortion groups. It's a relatively common practice among a kind of emerging set of extortion groups who target online resources, either using stolen credentials or exposed cloud resources. They steal the data. They don't ransom it like typical ransomware. They steal the data, and then they just extort the company they stole it from and say, we'll release all of the data we stole if you don't pay us. So they haven't actually impacted the like availability of an application, but they're extorting the company kind of in the same way a ransomware group would, even though a ransomware group is affecting availability, an extortion group isn't necessarily. Now, we've seen this before. There are like a couple S3 campaigns where people extorted exposed resources. There was the big Snowflake tenant compromises where the owners of the tenants were extorted. And I want to talk about the concept of paying hackers to delete your data, as these extortion campaigns typically demand. You should have absolutely no faith in the fact that they deleted the data they stole from you after you pay them. In a prominent recent example, when Waifu or allegedly Connor Mooka extorted AT&T out of a massive amount of data that they stole from an exposed Snowflake tenant, AT&T paid him to delete the data. He recorded a video of himself doing it and sent it to them. However, it was well known in his circles of friends that this data was being freely exchanged between people for weeks, if not months, before the exchange happened with AT&T, where one person deleted their copy of the data and was paid for it. There is, of course, a slim chance that they only had one copy of the data and that they deleted it when you asked. But it's generally safe to assume that a few other people have this data. Most of these groups, you know, are not acting alone. So at least other members of the extortion group probably have copies of the data. And part of this payment, I suppose, in the eyes of the organization paying, is not only to delete the data, but I assume also to not release the data. And that actually, in some cases, has been successful so far. Not a reason to pay them, but just a kind of an interesting note, which is in the Snowflake examples, many of the compromised tenants that did pay up who remain unnamed to this day. Their data has not yet shown up on the internet. And in the PowerSchool example, we know they paid the threat actor, according to their own, or alleged by NBC, according to their own admission. But the PowerSchool data itself is not online. This, if it was, this would, you know, constitute the largest leak of student data of all time. So we certainly hope that the threat actor did delete the data and has no intention of releasing it or selling it down the line. But again, absolutely no reason to assume that that wouldn't happen. But at least for now, the data is not public. This is a large data leak. Tons and tons of people have been notified and will continue to be notified. But the data itself is not circulating as far as we know. Now, the leading narrative and what PowerSchool has said appears to be that stolen credentials were available to login portals for this application on the dark web. Those stolen accounts were used to log into the application and steal the data. So it doesn't explicitly say these are from InfoStealer logs, but in these cases, it's not exactly a reach to say that that's where URL login and password entries are most commonly extracted from. So I'm thinking that's the likely culprit right now. For our second story, and this one could be like a novel in its own, so it probably will be one day a novel. Europol and the U.S. Justice Department announced that Operation Talent, an operation whose name has already been criticized as being not a very cool name, was responsible for the takedown of two of some of the largest hacking forums on the internet, Nulled and Cracked, or at least the takedown of the domains, among a bunch of other consequences of Operation Talent, which we'll discuss. So according to authorities, two arrests were made, seven properties were searched, 17 servers and more than 50 electronic devices were taken into evidence, and roughly $310,000 in cash and crypto were discovered. Two people have been speculated as the targets of the arrest, though no law enforcement agency has yet officially come out and named those arrested. But what we do know is that the two arrested were in Spain. This is interesting because there is a known Nulled moderator who lives in Spain. But again, we don't know for sure. And honestly, some of the most major players between Nulled and Cracked don't live in Spain. So I think people were expecting those arrests to be announced in European countries, and were kind of surprised that they weren't. So a lot more than just Cracked and Nulled were a part of this operation. But let's walk through each individual property. It's not a super long list, but it's more than just those two. But so first, Cracked. Cracked was a hacking forum that has been around since 2018. A lot of cybercrime happened on it, but kind of, you know, combo list style, a popular place for combo lists, for hacking tools, for spammy advertisements of services. Cracked has about 4 million users and was estimated to generate $4 million in revenue. And that's not like, that's money that Cracked itself made. That's not the number of transactions for sold data in their marketplaces that they might have facilitated or were done like in escrow off platform. Nulled is the other forum. Nulled has been around for a bit longer. Also a cybercrime and hacking forum, a little bit larger user base, about 5 million users, and was estimated to generate an annual revenue of about $1 million. Now, these two properties were the most important thing taken down. And it's important to note, because there are two major corners of the cybercrime world that are commonly covered, at least in like the US and EU, and that's the English-speaking and Russian-speaking cybercrime communities. And between those two, there are well over 100, you know, reasonably active cybercrime forums. But most of the action, most of the newsworthy stories really happen on just a few of them. Only a small percent of those forums have, you know, substantial enough user bases and traffic to be significant. And both Nulled and Cracked were definitely on that list in the world of English-speaking cybercrime communities. Now, you'll see Russian posts on all cybercrime communities, but these are overwhelmingly English-speaking places. So next, we have Celex and MyCelex. Cracked, a couple of the other places we're going to talk about, StarkRDP and RDP.sh, used Celex as a payment processor. It is well known also that the original founder of Cracked was also the founder of Celix. And by the way, one of Celix's not seized domains, Celix.com, currently has an official statement on Operation Talent, clarifying that they were not aware of any specific illegal transactions through its platform in connection with Cracked. So I don't know if that means that they're not aware that the Cracked transactions were illegal, or they're saying that those that happened on Cracked were not illegal, you know, at least to their knowledge, which is interesting because they do, at least in the relationship of their founder, they do have some crossover with each other, some very obvious connections. The next property is Stark RDP. This is a virtual server renting platform that was advertised heavily on Cracked and Nulled. And the next one is RDP.sh, another virtual server rental location that was heavily advertised on Cracked and Nulled. All of these are down now. Nulled, Cracked, Celix, MyCelix, Stark RDP, and RDP.sh. However, they all have landing pages that you can view in the Internet Archive. And at least Nulled and Cracked have a myriad of research written about them throughout the years that you can still check out. And the core leadership behind these platforms has not been arrested. Only two arrests on forums of that size. There are certainly relatively large, at least like a handful of moderators or people who have access to infrastructure that can re-spin up these services. So I don't expect this to be the end of those forums, or even of some of the Celix specifically. I think Stark RDP and RDP.sh, yeah, those are probably done. But I think, you know, when big forum takedowns like this happen, they kind of show back up. So we'll see. If not, you know, maybe a dramatic rise in membership for breach forums. Otherwise, I think one, if not both of these forums will probably be restored in like a couple months to be consistent with tradition. For our third story, more than 10,000 hotels from major chains like Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt, Wyndham were impacted by a leak or breach of data from the Hotelier hotel management platform. In this particular instance, the threat actor gained access to their AWS instance in July of 2024 and maintained access through October of 2024. The attacker claims to have stolen about 8 terabytes of data from their S3. This is in a post that they made on breach forums. And they also demand payment in the post of $10,000 in XMR from Hotelier. Now, this leak or a breach of the S3 environment specifically continues the disturbing trend of that we've covered. See the PowerSchool story from minutes ago, a very low effort extortion that I don't know if it worked in this case. I don't know if Hotelier paid, but in enough cases to be meaningful, this is actually working. Extortion groups are active. They're continuing to emerge. New kind of usernames are popping up who are doing these extortions on major cybercrime forums regularly. And they're walking in through the front door, so to speak. They are finding something leaking. They are taking a stolen cred and downloading some database and then saying, hey, I'm going to post this to X forum for the whole world to download or X like data leak site that I just spun up if you don't pay me. No ransomware, no tools, no malware development, no nothing. Just logging in, poking around a little, and downloading. Much like PowerSchool, the root cause, according to Hotelier, is a stolen credential. So at this point, I mean, it feels more likely than not. This is from a ULP or a Stealer log. So just like throw a dart last year and this year at any breach, read the fine print, and seems like odds are you're landing on what they'll say is a credential found on the dark web, which overwhelmingly means Stealer logs. For our fourth story, an interesting development in the increasingly controversial saga of DeepSeek. According to the research team at Wiz, who made an awesome write-up about this, you definitely should read. It'll be in the comments. Very talented research team. DeepSeek accidentally exposed an internal ClickHouse database to the public, which contained millions of lines of log streams that had chat history, secret keys, and all kinds of back-end details from their services. So ClickHouse, if you're not familiar, is a very popular open source database. People like Uber, eBay, Disney use it for ingesting wild amounts of like super verbose logs from maybe like user activity outputs, web sessions, application logs. They use it to look for anomalies, strange behaviors, or to just like study activity or train like big machine learning models over like petabyte sized data sets. So widely used piece of software. In this completely public and unauthenticated database was over a million lines of log streams in an index called log streams that contained the things I listed before, chat history, secret keys, backend details, and other sensitive information from users and services. So there were several tables in the leak that they found, but the log streams were the most interesting. So the write-up on this is very straightforward. They did active and passive DNS against the DeepSeek like Apex domain to find subdomains. They did queries for open ports that were like the not expected standard web ports, 80 and 443. They found two open ports that caught their eye, 8123 and 9000. Access to the 9000 port said, hey, use 8123 for the HTTP version of ClickHouse. They did, and it was an HTTP interface where they could run commands against the ClickHouse tables. They ran the show tables command and saw a couple of options. Log streams was one of them. They ran select all from log stream and done. Boom. Had raw logs from tons of DeepSeek services, including the API backend, the chat backend that had chat logs, the platform backend, a usage checking service, and probably more, but that's the only ones they list in their write-up. And within these logs were columns like timestamp, the timestamp of the log. They found logs dating back to January 6, 2025. Span name, which referenced the internal DeepSeek API endpoint in use. Underscore service that indicated the DeepSeek service generating the log. Strings.values, which were plain text logs that contained all the juicy stuff, chat histories, API keys, backend details, operational metadata. And then five is source_source, which exposed the origin of the log requests and also contained chat history. You know, some of the juicy stuff was in here too, API keys, directory structure, and chatbot metadata. Now, the database is closed now, so that's great. And obviously, this is super unfortunate for them. But I think it highlights something interesting and not as kind of considered in the world of AI risks, which usually when you talk about risks to like AI tools, you're talking about like model poisoning or jailbreaks, which are certainly important things, especially for like red teaming models or for understanding how models can be exploited. But the big leak here that I continue to worry about with AI tools for the sake of the many, many organizations who upload proprietary code and developers who copy and paste code that has secrets in it straight into the little chat window is the chat data leaking. That's really like the big risk that doesn't get the same level of love, I think, in the AI risks conversation. But imagine all of the secrets, intellectual property, internal documentation, copies of files, copies of backups of databases that have been dragged and dropped in order to get help writing a query. It's like some of the largest data leaks, if they happened, would be of chat history. It contains every kind of category of data that you could possibly be concerned about leaking. So unfortunately, that's come true in this case. You know, hopefully that it doesn't hit other major applications in the space, but I continue to maintain that I think that's one of the bigger risks of mass adoption or rapid adoption of AI tools, maybe with in some cases a lack of consideration for security in the design phase, is these chat logs accidentally being exposed. And for our last story here, the ITRC, The Identity Theft Resource Center has published their 2024 breach report, listing the top five compromises by victim count. At least the count is by breach notification sent to victims. So let's go over the top five real quick and dig into the insights here. One, Ticketmaster, 560 million victims. Two, Advanced Auto Parts, 380 million victims. And when I say victims, I mean individual notices that went out. Change Healthcare, 190 million victims. Pure Incubation, which was the demand science leak, 121.8 million notices. And AT&T at 110 million victim notices. So what I'd like to point out is that three out of the five leaks on that list were from one campaign, which I talked about on this show, even in this episode, the Snowflake campaign that was done by a member of Scattered Spider or the Com targeting Snowflake tenants that didn't have two-factor enabled on these accounts. Again, not Snowflake's fault. Their customers are responsible for their own authentication settings. But just remember, the Snowflake leak alone impacted over 160 companies. And evidently, just three of them won the prize for being some of the largest data breaches and leaks of the year of 2024. That is a wild scale for one campaign. I can't imagine if you added all 160 up, what the total count of like required notices or individual records exposed was. And according to one of the primary perpetrators of the campaign, as reported by Brian Krebs before the perpetrator was arrested, he said Snowflake isn't even the biggest BPO / MSP multi-company data set on our networks. But what's been exfiltrated from them is well over 100 terabytes. Now, 100 terabytes of record data, like username and password data or like PII records, that's a lot. It takes a lot of individual lines to create 100 terabytes. But I'm sure there's lots of other verbose stuff in there that was like raw log output from applications that is absolutely not makes up some of that 100 terabytes that's not super sensitive in the same way. He also went on to brag, only ones that don't pay get disclosed unless they disclose it themselves. And he also said, this is interesting, a lot of them don't even do their SEC filing and just pay us to bleep off. Family-friendly show here. That's kind of compelling that he's calling out his own victims and saying they didn't even do their required SEC filing after we hacked them. But I just want to put into perspective that Snowflake campaign. And you know what? Unless something interesting happens, I promise not to bring it up again on this show. But this highlights the evolution of these extortion groups who are using the easiest path, the path of least resistance, to get into company databases, database software, and exposed cloud storage, and hold that data for ransom. And as we can see, the impacts are definitely substantial. All right, friends, that's it. That's it for today's episode of Leaky Weekly. Thank you again for tuning in. As always, this show was brought to you by Flare, the world's easiest to use and most comprehensive cybercrime database that integrates into your security program in 30 minutes. If you're interested in learning more or staying ahead of the cybercrime world, check out the Flare Academy's free online trainings. These are for all levels. You can earn a CPE credit by doing them. And sign up for the next training in the podcast link below. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next one.